is Jason Selke, and I play Rifleman Harris, aka Chosen Man Harris, in Sharp's Rifles. Well, it was just like any other audition I had. My agent called me, said, be at a certain place at a certain time. This was back in May 1992. I went to the audition, and so Sharp is a Napoleonic soldier, and he works his way up through the ranks with crazy acts of bravery. And when he first comes on the scene, he gets assigned to look after this group of riflemen known as the Chosen Men. And at first they are at loggerheads because they don't know why they've been assigned this stranger, and you know, when they're great soldiers already. And after initially fighting, they get along together and they become a great fighting unit. The character I played is called Rifleman Harris. The real Rifleman Harris, Benjamin Randall Harris, was a 95th foot infantryman who was in the Napoleonic Wars and didn't make it all the way to Waterloo because he got a very bad fever in a place called Walcheren. So Bernard Cornwall, his books are what the Sharp series is based upon. But Harris didn't appear in those books at first. When they were creating the series, they wanted to have a rifleman with brains. So they added Harris into the other Chosen Men from the show, which is Cooper, Tom, Hagman, etc. So my character in Sharp is supposed to be the clever one. Although the original Harris from the book Recollections of Rifleman Harris, he couldn't read or write. Yes, the Harris Diaries, right. So when I got the part of Sharp, I read the Sharp novels, Sharp's Rifles, Sharp's Eagle, Sharp's Gold, the three novels we were supposed to be shooting on that first year. But before I read those novels, I had heard that my character, as I mentioned earlier, wasn't a Bernard Cornwall creation, but was a real character, and he had a book that was published. As I mentioned before, he couldn't read or write, but he recalled all of his stories. Someone else wrote them down, hence the Recollections of Rifleman Harris. That's what this book is called. I bought this book, I read this book, and I thought, maybe I should recall all of my tales, all of my adventures on this TV show I'm about to shoot, because it's set in Napoleonic times, but it's actually shot in the newly broken up Soviet Union in the Crimea, southern Ukraine to be exact. So I thought it might be good if I wrote a diary, kept a bunch of photos, and eventually do a video diary. So the Harris Diaries you refer to are a video behind the scenes a behind the scenes look at what it's like to make Sharp on video. Well, Bernard is the godfather of Sharp. Without him, none of this would be possible. His wonderful stories, his fantastic grasp of history, and enveloping a great story around all that history and really dragging it along. No one could do it better. Bernard started as a journalist in Britain, in Northern Ireland, I believe. He married an American woman, moved to America, couldn't get a job because he didn't have a green card, so he thought, well, I better start writing a book to see if I can make a few quid off that. And we all know what happened 20 or 30 books later. He's one of the best known historical authors on earth. So Bernard's a great guy. He used to come and visit us on set every year, come take us to dinner, take us on a cruise. I got on really well with him. He lives currently in Massachusetts, and I lived in Massachusetts for about 10 years because my father got a job teaching at a university there. So whenever I was in Massachusetts, I always give Bernard a call. But he's wonderful. He's written the foreword to my book. He's a never-ending source of inspiration for me, and he's well-loved by anyone who likes a good story, especially British historical tales. Right, so on Sharp, the action is set in the peninsula during the Peninsular War of 1809 to 1814 or so. But they didn't shoot it in Spain and Portugal. They tried to price up the shooting of it in Spain. It proved to be very expensive. So we shot the first low sharp in the Crimea, southern Ukraine, now annexed by Russia. And we stayed in a place called Yalta, and we filmed all around the mountains and the valleys around the town of Yalta. And the first year, we also did about a 3 week to a month stint in Portugal, which is where the peninsula war took place, using a lot of historical buildings. Over the five series of Sharp, we shot in primarily in the Crimea for the first three series. We did bits in Portugal in those first three series. And then the remains of the series were shot in Turkey and England. So four countries were used as locations for Sharp: Ukraine, Portugal, Turkey, and England. Well, it's interesting because there have been two Sharps, which if you buy my book, you'll find out. My book, From Crimea With Love. There were two Sharps in May of 1999. Well, actually in July of 1999, when I got the part of Rifleman Harris, I spoke to my agent and I found out that Paul McGann was cast as Sharp. Paul McGann, very famous actor, who's with Neil and I, Monocle Mutineer, played Doctor Who in the movie version of Doctor Who, the one in 1996. And he was also a friend of mine, so I was quite happy. But unfortunately, Paul McGann hurt his knee playing football in the first week out in the Crimea. Never really fixed it because we were, you know, we didn't have an English doctor, and the medical standards were a bit substandard. So after about 6 weeks, Paul had to quit to go and get his knee seen to, and they closed the production. We all flew home to England. And about 5 days later, we were told the production was starting again, and Sean Bean had replaced Paul McGann. So my first meeting with Sean Bean was at an airport bar at Heathrow as we were on our way to Moscow. Very nice. And we had a little bit of party on the plane then to the Crimea. So my first meeting was with Sean on the October the 5th, 1992, as we flew out to the Crimea to restart filming. And Sean's a great Sharp. He's perfect for Sharp, really. I know he's not a Londoner. He's not born in Shoreditch. He hasn't got a big scar down his face, and he's not 6'4" with black hair. But I think he played Sharp really well. Paul McGann is a great actor, but probably Sean was more suited for the part. Yes, it's similar to the Paul McGann Sean Bean switch. David Troughton, fantastic, fantastic actor, brilliantly imposing on screen, very, very scary almost. Great scenes when he's dressing down Simerson in Sharp's Eagle, really brilliant scenes. He's kind of Wellington who probably would beat the crap out of you, you know. and he and Brian Cox were very, very good together in Rifles and Eagle. Unfortunately, because we were in the Crimea and it was the Soviet Union breaking up and the standards, the hygiene standards, all standards were very below what we were used to. David Troughton got very ill with something called Giardia lambia, which is a sort of dysentery, an amoebic dysentery, and didn't want to do Sharp again after we did the first series, especially out in the Crimea. So they replaced David Troughton with Hugh Fraser. Hugh Fraser looked a lot more like the Wellington we knew, the image of Wellington, the Wellington that was on the £5 note at the time, sort of graying hair. Of course, both of them had a fake nose. But Hugh's portrayal was a lot more thoughtful. Well, no, they're both thoughtful, but Hugh used sort of lowering and raising his voice and different tones to get across his message. No, he wasn't above raising his voice. It was very tough at times. But he had a different approach. Equally as strong, but his was more searching. He would sort of come around and bring you around on a little journey, and then at the end slap you across the head if that's what his desired aim was. So it was very interesting to watch Hugh at work, in fact. But you know, they were both great Wellingtons, I must say that. Equally strong. But of course, I had more time with Hugh, so you know, I sort of am more used to Hugh, and he is my Wellington, if I can say that. Yes. Well, after meeting him at the airport, and we had a little party on the plane. The next day is when we got the rifles out, and we went and started practicing being riflemen. So that's when we first saw Sean in action shooting. I mean, you know, we weren't in costume. And then the very next day, we started shooting the Battle of Talavera, which was a full-on shoot. Lots of extras, lots of fighting, lots of hand-to-hand, lots of fake blood. And you could really see that Sean was totally suited for rough and tumble fighting. It didn't matter if he took a smack or a biff, he would carry on fighting. It was very scary when he's charging at you with his sword and you know, didn't pull his punches almost when he's fighting with a stuntman. So it was very impressive watching Sean, and we knew that it would take a lot to knock him out and stop him from filming. Yes, costumes and makeup. We had a very famous costume house, a couple of them actually, helping us. We had Angels costumes, perhaps people have heard of Angels, and we had a costume house called Berman and Nathan's. I guess they specialize in military stuff. So we had them on the English end helping us, providing costumes. I first went to a costume fitting with the costume wardrobe designer. His name was John Mollow. And I went and I met him at the Angel showroom on Shaftesbury Avenue. We did the measurements and he told me about everything. And John Mollow, by the way, is a two-time Oscar winner. He won an Oscar for Gandhi and he won an Oscar for Empire Strikes Back. So that's when I first saw my costumes. I wasn't that impressed with them really, because when Sharp meets the Chosen Men, we have been on this retreat to Kiruna. From Corona, I can't remember which one. And so we've been out in the field marching in our clothes are bedraggled and we're you know, dirty and, you know, dragged through hedges backwards. And so the costumes are very holy and scrappy and buttons falling off and raggy, and I wasn't very impressed, but you know, I soon got used to that and I realized why. For the makeup, yes, we had a wonderful Portuguese hair and makeup team on the first year, and they liked, my hair was very long at that point, so not like it is now. And they had a lot of fun, Sano, the hair lady, she had a lot of fun putting my hair into different positions. And I remember I was told to grow a stubble, but you could never see it on screen. So I was like, why do I have to grow a stubble? And I was given a scar down the side of my face, which also I never really could see on the screen. So I kind of like, I was thinking, why do I have to have these things? Anyway, it all worked out well. And then we also had costume help from a massive costume house called Moss Film. As we were shooting in Ukraine, the newly broken up Soviet Union, we had service providers, you know, local service providers, costume, camera, extras, all these kind of things. And the head of wardrobe on the Russian side, they had a connection with Moss Film. So we had a lot of French infantry costumes, a lot of British costumes that they used in the 1969 Bondarchuk Waterloo film. A lot of the extras costumes used in that we used on Sharp. So that was pretty interesting. So yeah, we had some really good top people on the wardrobe. And down the years, we had some really great hair and makeup people too. What can I tell you about Dara? Well, I've written a lot about him in my book, From Cry Me With Love. Harper is the single most important character after Sharp, and not far past Sharp. He's really essential. He's a great springboard for Sharp. He's you know, stronger than Sharp. He's always has Sharp's back. Dara early on identified Sharp as basically a buddy movie between Sharp and Harper. I know there's lots of women, I know there's chosen men, but essentially the thing running through is a Sharp and Harper, their relationship. You know, they explore the whole Irish thing, you know, British-Irish, you know, the class with the military establishment, all those dynamics get explored in the Harper and Sharp relationship. I certainly would have loved to have played Harper. Of course, I'm not Irish, I'm not big as Darrow is. But Darrow was Darrow's a very interesting character. He didn't suffer fools at all. So you had to be, you know, a lot of people were kind of scared of Darrow on set. But he brought a great deal of warmth and a great deal of camaraderie that we all clung to. For instance, Darrow was the first person, well, one of the first people to have a shortwave radio that we could listen to the football scores on a Saturday. We'd tune into World Service Football. And, you know, those who couldn't hear the radio, he'd write down the scores and he'd place them in the hotel lobby, or I say hotel, the sanatorium lobby, for everyone to see. But if you go on the wrong side of Darrow, forget it. You just might as well leave the show. Just get out. Never mind. But yeah, he's an essential part of Sharp. In fact, he was one of the first characters, if not the first character, to be cast in Sharp. And I can't think of any other actor who would be better or as good, really, in the role. So yeah, love Darrow. He's great. Lyndon Davis, young Perkins, sir. Well, Lyndon was essentially my main partner in crime during the 3 years, particularly the last 2 years that Lyndon was on Sharp. We were normally in the same car riding to work together. We were normally placed next to each other in our sanatorium. He lived very close to me in London, around the corner from me. So we'd see each other a lot in the off season. He'd be the first person that I would call, or vice versa, if we heard any tidbits of news about what's happening next on Sharp, or any tidbits about Sharp actors, or Sean, or Darrow. In fact, I spoke to Lyndon probably yesterday, and I got an email from him this morning, so, you know, I'm still in great touch. But his character, yeah, so his character is the young one, obviously, and a lot of our interactions with him sort of give towards his character, because he doesn't say a lot of lines. So there's a sort of protective veil we have around him until at the end he shoots the man about to kill Sharp, and he goes up in our estimation and he becomes a chosen man. He's one of us, basically, after being just the flag holder for Major Dunnett. But yeah, and there was a great, great, massive trauma when his character was killed and he was no longer going to be with us on set. Everyone, the actors, the cast, the crew, all felt that, felt his absence. Every Saturday night he would hold a little disco party in the bar, insert a stereo, bring latest dance tunes and rock the house until late into the night. And many nights he was the top DJ on Sharp. So yeah, he was fantastic on Lyndon Davis Perkins. Yes, John Tam Tagman, the most talented chosen man. Correct, he sang the songs, it's his real voice. He, along with his partner Dominic Muldooney, they did the score for all of Sharp, all the incidental music. After we shot all the footage, they would go to Moscow and they would hire a symphony orchestra and recording rooms, and they would film the score. Hagman lasted all through the 5 series, like myself. In fact, he was in one more episode than me. John Tams, when we were a few minutes light on footage for the first episode, Sharp's Rifles, they needed to have an extra scene written, and they turned to John Tams, and John Tams wrote the chosen man introduction scene where Sharp walks along the chosen man and says, "What do you do, Harris? I can read, sir," that kind of stuff. So John Tams wrote that. So John Tams is very, very influential and integral and important in the story and in the scripts of Sharp. And of course, his music ties everything together really beautifully, and his voice is just really distinctive. Without that, you know, Sharp isn't quite the same thing. And you know, we were the last two chosen men standing. We died together at Waterloo. Well, Hagman died because he's buried in the new Sharp novel, Assassin, and I wasn't buried anywhere, so maybe Harris can come back. But yes, John Tabbs and I were the last two men standing, and it's interesting because at the read-through in August of 1992, I chose to sit down next to this actor, I didn't know who it was, and it was John Tabbs. So we were connected from the very first minute. Yes, the weaponry on Sharp. The British Army at the time, the Redcoats, they used muskets just like the French used, and they were accurate to a distance of 50 yards. Very good when they fired in ranks and they could fire in a sort of orchestrated way. Sharp's rifles, they had rifles, and that meant that the barrels were rifled, they had grooved, and which causes the musket ball to spin, which gives it a higher accuracy and a higher length of travel. So we had Baker rifles, which were made by a chap called Ezekiel Baker. We also had very long bayonets, which were called sword bayonets, and those were our chief weapons. Now, on the second series, Sergeant Harper was issued with what's called a volley gun, which was made by a manufacturer called Mr. Nock of London. And they were made initially for the Navy. They were naval volley guns, and they were used for people to shoot from the rigging down to anyone attempting to board the ship. So it laid out seven bullets, so seven barrels could shoot seven bullets all at once down on the enemy, and that would dissuade anyone trying to board. Now, what they found was that these volley guns, because they had seven bullets they were shooting, they would give a lot of backfire, a lot of wadding would shoot out to the front and back of it because bullets are kept in the wadding, and they were setting fire to the rigging. So the Navy quickly disbanded use of them. And so in the story, Sharp's company, Harper has this gun, which, you know, has the kick of a mule when you shoot it, but does massive destruction. So Harper had the volley gun plus a Baker rifle, and all the chosen men had Baker rifles as well as Sharp. And normal British soldiers had muskets. Well, yes, the last episode of Sharp's Waterloo. A monumentous episode. Everyone knows about the Battle of Waterloo. Lots of men died. And in the book, Hagman is killed by Bernard Cornwell in the book. So in the series, they thought, well, let's kill both Hagman and Harris. So unfortunately, at the very end, we are detailed to look after William of Orange, Silly Billy, as was known, inside this place called Les Haies Saintes, which was a barn, a farm that we were barricading against a massive onslaught of an overwhelming amount of French troops. And all of a sudden, Silly Billy, William of Orange, and his staff make a bolt for it out of the main doors into this massive, massed ranks of French. And we, being dutiful soldiers, run after them on foot while they're on horseback. And they run off, of course, and we are left surrounded by 100, 200, 300 French who close in on Harris and Hagman and do what they're paid to do, take out the British soldiers. And Hagman and I fall to the ground we are no more. And it's a lovely scene because as I fall, I grasp Hagman's hand, and then just as our hands clasp and our dying breath goes, a fly lands on my hand. Fantastic. Great ending. Very sad, but a great episode. Pretty fitting ending to a great series. Even though they did two more episodes in India. Right. In general, we were shooting three episodes a year, with the exception of the first year, which I'll cover in a second. Each episode took about 33 days to shoot. You'd need, obviously, a day off every 6 days, and you need a transition period between each episode, and you need longer time between a night shoot and resuming a day shoot. So on the first year of Sharp, we were supposed to shoot 3 episodes, but because of the Paul McGann injury and the time we lost because of that, they decided to just film 2 episodes, Rifles and Eagle. So that with all of the delays, took 4 months. So we were shooting in the Crimea. We started shooting the Crimea like August the 5th, and we came back from Portugal on Christmas Eve. So we were 4 months out there, which we did come home one time. And then the following year, we were about out there for 4 months continuously. And then the years after, we split times between Portugal and England and Turkey and England. So generally, it was 4 months of the end of the year is when we made Sharp. Yeah, I mean, Harris luckily had some good storylines which involved Harris and the narrative, Sharp Sword, where I'm breaking the code from the French spy's code, and Sharp's Mission, where I'm made to be Sharp's butler. Those are 2 great episodes for me, and I cherish them, love doing them, love shooting them, love watching them. But I do really like all the bits when the Chosen Men and Sharp and Harper are all going on a commando mission or have to, you know, take out an overwhelming force of baddies, you know, save the day, save Liz Hurley in the convent. Those kind of scenes I really love the most. The camaraderie of the Chosen Men fighting together, the sort of clever tricks of war we would play. So yeah, anything involving lots of Chosen Men, which primarily were the first 3 episodes, were the best. Do I have memories of Sharp? Well, I do have lots of memories. The biggest reminder of Sharp I have are my wife and son. My wife was a girl from Yalta, Crimea, who was working on Sharp, and we conceived our son, who's now 26, on Sharp. So I have those 2. They remind me of Sharp every single second. So my memories, but you know, the memories are mixed of making Sharp, because on the one hand, there was this fantastic job, a great job opportunity, exotic location, fantastic stories, great actors, beautiful looking locations, lots of soldiers, shooting, playing soldiers. But there was a downside as well, which was we were thrust into a country in chaos, the newly broken up Soviet Union, Ukraine. The food was, there was obviously good food there, but the supplies were bad, and good food wasn't readily obvious or where to find it. And hygiene standards weren't really that good, so a lot of people got a stomach bug. So there were a lot of downsides, but it was a great adventure because we were shooting in that turmoil, because we were shooting an action film, because we were shooting with guns and lots of extras and army. It made it quite exciting. So, I mean, I have lots of fantastic memories of it. In fact, so many, I wrote them down there in a book, From Crimea with Love, which if you like Sharp, you will love. And also because I wanted to emulate Harris of the Recollections of Ethan Harris, I did write a diary, which became my book. I did take a lot of photos, and I did do a video diary. So it's almost like Sharp hasn't left me for better or worse. Maybe Sharp hasn't even finished for me, because all I've done for the last 25, 29 years is talk to fans about Sharp. And go to Living History festivals, battle reenactments conventions, war game shows, toy soldier shows, and talk about Sharp to people online, etc., etc. So, yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of great memories of Sharp, and will never ever leave me. Well, my primary inspiration has to be my father. My father is a writer. He wrote children's books, he wrote poetry, he wrote political stuff, he wrote a couple of journals about traveling in different countries, Cuba and Guyana. But then my second inspiration must be Harris, of the Recollections of Rifleman Harris. When I read that book, I said to myself, I'm going to document all of my adventures on Sharp, with a diary photos and a video diary. Then there's probably a third inspiration from reading the short novels. I got inspired by Burnham and the whole world he created. So those three things, as well as the turmoil and the chaos we faced in the first 3 years in the newly broken up song, all those things together, I thought, well, this is going to make a very interesting story. And it really was, because lots of stuff happened. You know, it started off with the lead actor, Paul McGann, doing his crucial ignorance on his knee, which changed the whole show, which led to Sean Bean being on the show, and possibly led to it being the great success it is. So I felt that would be a great, compelling narrative for anyone to read, not just Shark fans. And the fact that I was in all 5 years, and then at the end of between the fourth and the fifth year, there was a lawsuit between Paul McGann, and I sided with a certain side, which possibly impacted on my final year on Sharp. We'll never know. I felt all that would be a great story. So I've got it all down in a book called From Crimea With Love. It's published by Unbound. You can get it at Waterstones, and you can get it at Amazon, of course, and all good book retailers. And you can get a signed copy from me if you want to contact me through Facebook or through my website, reifmanharris.co.uk, reifmanharris.co.uk. So those things inspired me to write a book, and it's just come out in July of this year, 2021. And it's selling well, and I'm thinking about writing another book, but I'm not sure what about yet, but it won't be about Sharp, obviously, because I've gotten all of my Sharp stuff out. But I recommend, if you like Sharp, if you like a behind-the-scenes story, if you like an insider story, if you're interested in what the Soviet Union was like at that time, it's the book for you. It makes a great Christmas present. I advise you to buy it. Yes, Tom Clegg replaced the original director, Jim Goddard, when Paul McGann was replaced by Sean Bean in that whole mix-up in the early part of Sharp. The original director, Jim Goddard, very famous, he directed a movie called Shanghai Surprise with Madonna and Sean Penn. I don't know if anyone remembers that, not a very good film. He was the one that cast me. In fact, he cast all the chosen men, Harper, Hagman, Perkins, Cooper. So he has a very special place in my heart, Jim Goddard. He's unfortunately dead now, as is Tom. So when he was replaced, I was slightly taken aback, but Tom was very good at his action, shooting action. He was very famous for making The Sweeney, Minder, a couple other famous films. He did the official World Cup film of 1982. Did a lot of work, very good at it. But he didn't maybe have the same sort of love for the thing he created that maybe Jim Goddard had, because he knew he created our look. He created the chosen men. He chose all of those faces, which down the years a lot of people appreciate and think is really great. So Tom I had to respect, because he was getting the show done. He was getting the scenes cut, getting the scenes in the can, moving on without any fuss, moving along, but maybe necessarily didn't hold the chosen men as in high regard as I would have liked. But he was great, and I respect him for that, because, as I said, he sailed through all the series. We knew where we were with Tom. He got it all done, as I said. And, you know, in the end, that sort of formula he was using worked really well with that format. You know, the men overcoming the odds, and they get the girl, and the baddie gets killed, and the whole formula. He had such control over that, which shows. The episodes are really tight, and, you know, God bless Tom. So Jim cast me in the show, which I'm forever grateful, but Tom really had a great handle on how the show should look and delivering those episodes every single time. And may they both rest in peace. Tom Clegg died in 2017, and Jim Goddard died about a few years earlier than that. So, two great men.